Hello, and welcome to another interview from Jason's Connection. I'm Erica McIntyre, Jason's Connection's Content Director. Today I'll be talking with Bill Shannon, an interdisciplinary performance artist, skater, and dancer. So my first question is, how did you get started in the arts, and why do you choose to work in so many diverse media?
I got started pretty early. You know, I wasn't able to play in team sports like my brother, and so my parents would, you know, put me in art workshops, and I was just had a natural affinity for just making things, and just been fascinated with making things. So that's how it really got started, just really early on in my childhood. And basically, becoming an interdisciplinary artist was someone who uses lots of different types of art to express themselves, or combinations of art. That really came from my practice as an adult and kind of trying to, you know, not determine what I'm doing by in terms of media, but in terms of concept. So a lot of the work that I do is idea-driven, and the media that I create the work in is based on what fits the idea best. So I really just go with whatever I feel like is really the right way to ask a question or find some solution to some challenge. An example would be, you know, well, street dance is danced in clubs, but how do you bring street dance to the proscenium setting? And so, you know, I did a series of works about, you know, does street dance really work in a stage? And then, well, that was like dance performance and choreography. You know, so it answered that question in that way. You know, I could make a drawing or, you know, some other type of work. But yeah, so depending on the concept, that's the direction the work goes in terms of media is really dependent. And I will try to learn something. If I don't know how to do something, and, you know, like I want to do a series of screen prints and I've never screen printed before, I will learn how to screen print just for that project, you know. So I am continuously acquiring new skills in terms of fabrication and making as well, and different practices, acting, whatever, to get things done.
Cool. When you were only 5 years old, you were diagnosed with, and forgive me if I mispronounce this, Legkaspersisi? How do you pronounce it?
Perthes disease.
Okay. Yeah. Can you explain for our listeners what this is and how it affects you?
It's a fairly rare disorder. They aren't really sure exactly why it happens. They know that it has to do somewhat with the circulatory system during early childhood, where for some reason the bone in the hip, the head of the femur, the ball and socket joint, is not getting the right type of blood flow, and so the bone is literally dying. So, you know, Perthes is marked by osteonecrosis of the head of the femur, which literally means death of the bone, and that's because for some reason the blood's just not going to it, and it's, you know, you're at this young age, and it has also, though they're not sure, again, to do with, you know, you go through several stages of bone solidification. So basically, you know, your bone really needs that circulation as it's developing. When it doesn't get it, it dies. And then, you know, if you, in your adulthood, then you have, you know, once you hit that older stage of bone solidification in your teenage years where your bones harden off, then whatever effects of Perthes are done. So you don't, you know, it's not like you have Perthes your whole life. It is an early childhood disease. And then what you're left with in adulthood is a degenerative condition based on a bone deformity that was created by the Perthes to, you know, greater or lesser extent, whether or not you've had surgery. So there's a lot of, you know, that's what Legkaspersisi disease. You can get it in one hip, you can get it in both hips.
Oh, wow.
You know, and there's lots of different outcomes for Perthes as well. But it's one of those, like, you know, diseases that you get as a kid and you're disabled, and it's very psychological. It's not just physical. I mean, the impact of the disease is physical, but your relationship to the world because of the disease is very much, has a certain psychology about it because it's so ambiguous. meaning that you're not supposed to walk on your hips and put pressure on them because it damages the hip. But it's not like damaging an open wound. It's a very slow misshaping of that bone. And you can have severe pain immediately, but there's also damaging the bone without feeling any pain in it. So it has a certain ambiguity to it. You know, somebody can have perthes and walk around, or they can be in a wheelchair, or they can be on two crutches or one crutch or a cane. You know, so it's just the degree of impact and the degree of recovery is pretty broad in perthes disease.
Right. So you were literally the poster child for Easter seals when you were five.
Yes.
It really seems a truly exceptional trajectory from that to being a dancer and a skateboarder. How on earth did you start dancing and skateboarding?
Well, you know, again, it's about how things happen. I mean, you know, I was the Easter Seals poster child at 5 years old. You know, I was in Nashville, Tennessee. They sent out a fundraiser. And, you know, they put me on the cover. I think it was because, you know, I was you know, I had a disability, but I was very charismatic. I didn't have a developmental disability. You know, I think there's a certain, you know, cream of, what they call cream of cripples. That's not my term, but I read about it somewhere. I can't remember. It's sort of like the notion that you're disabled, but you're really accessible to able-bodied people.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's part of the reason they put me there is because I had the crutches and the brace, but, you know, otherwise I was some, you know, charismatic, young, cute, white kid. You know, white boy, you know, and that's, you know, for fundraisers, you know, that's what they kind of want, you know, people to identify. So anyway, that's my understanding of that poster child situation, because the school that I was in was for, when they came to take that picture, it was for, you know, a broad range of disabilities. And it was the only time I was ever put in a school for disability, because it was the first year that I had perthes, and my parents were like, you know, okay, well, we got to, you know, take him somewhere so he kind of gets his, finds his way. And, you know, I was basically mainstreamed in the 70s before that was even a term for disabled kids in school. But, you know, how did I come to dance and skateboard? Well, you know, the notion that you sit around and you think of something and then you do it, you know, that there's this sort of be process, this linear notion of ideas that these things happened to me. I danced because I was in a place where there was music and other people dancing, and I loved it. And so I started to dance. Even when I was on my crutches, I was really into music. And also the nature of perthes, you know, like I had perthes starting at 5, but I got off my crutches at 12. And then at 10 years old, I kind of learned to walk again and was fairly, you know, normal. I mean, there was a lot of limitation. Like I couldn't do really big jumps and really heavy duty lifting or long range running or anything like that. But for all intents and purposes, if someone just looked at me, they were like, there's, you know, they had no indication that I had a disability in terms of looking at me walking, other than maybe a slight scoliosis of my back, just very subtle, and a slight leg length discrepancy, and, you know, some limping when I got fatigued. But you know, dancing, I started really in street dance after I got off my crutches. So when I was like, you know, 12 years old, and it was 1982, I was born in 1970. So, you know, 1983, 84, 85, you know, it's the emergence of hip hop. It's the emergence of the, you know, the rebirth of skating and street skating, the birth of street skating, the very first wave of real, like, applying, you know, ramp. That's where, you know, you never copy the other guy. You always come up with your original style and your independent route. And, growing up and being the only disabled kid in the entire school and having no peers to look to and really no one else even who had my disability that I ever met in my entire childhood. In fact, the first time I ever met anybody with Perthes was, you know, a few weeks ago. And in my entire life, I've never met anyone who actually, you know, some child who had it, so it was very interesting to do that. But, to go to this, down to this camp and meet all these kids who had Perthes, and you know, it was very emotional because I realized, you know, I really was an island unto myself in a lot of ways because I had to be, because my parents had no common experience, my brother didn't, none of my friends at school. And so, you know, street dance and street skating really were the perfect place for someone like myself who was always very independent and self-directed and, you know, finding out my own solutions. Both of those forms, you know, had some structure but required participants to really, to in order to succeed, they had to find their own way. And so that's why I gravitated, I think, you know, towards the fashion and the practice and the culture and the attitude all kind of fed into my history of disability.
It kind of is an almost, skating's almost a combination between athleticism and artistry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. There's a very, you're right, it's not like a sport where it's like, you know, you hit a ball and you have to hit it this way. A lot of my friends in high school were skaters, so I've always been fascinated by it. I've never been able to do it, but I've always been fascinated with it. You dance on crutches, and I was on crutches temporarily, and it hurt like hell. How on earth did you, how do you do this dance on crutches? I mean, I hope you're not in constant pain, but I just know that when I was on crutches, it was terrible. It hurt so badly. And that was just to get myself around. And yet you've turned crutch dancing into this beautiful art form. You have all these fluid movements. It's truly amazing. How does that work?
Well, first of all, you know, you have to realize that the onset of my disability was 5 years old, and I got my first set of crutches then. And, you know, doctors have a lot of different choices about which way they want to go. Sometimes they'll say, you know, you look like a good candidate to have a hip replacement, or, you know, you should be in bed, or let's fixate your hips in this certain position and put a cast on you. So there's a lot of different treatments. Well, I got treated. My treatment was, you know, be on crutches. So as starting at 5 years old, up until I was 12, I always had crutches. So, it was more like 6 years, but the last year was kind of like an in-between because I had it in both hips. It went from my right to my left. But basically, because of that childhood, I really became crutches became second nature to me. And I have a suspicion, though no biological proof, that I also built up some resistance to the pain in the armpit because it's very hard to dance on crutches. I mean, it is very painful. And it's very difficult mentally because it's an inverse of the physics of dancing. And you also have to think about, well, you're not just moving your 2 feet, you're also moving your 2 crutches as if they were feet. And then sometimes you're moving your crutches while your hands are off the crutches by using your armpits and your hip and your elbow to move the crutch while you're moving your hands and your feet together. So you have, you know, 6 extensions of the body. So, you know, the challenge of dancing on crutches is number one, it's very physical. When anyone tries it, I mean, I worked for Cirque du Soleil. They hired me to teach somebody to do what I – well, they actually hired me to be in the show, and I turned them down because I'm very focused and, you know, independent. I like my own direction in my artistic practice, and, you know, joining up the circus and being on their tour meant that I did the same thing every day, twice a day, week after week, month after month, year after year, and I'm not built like that. I'm an independent artist, and, you know, I have a lot of different directions at the same time. So I turned them down, but I did have to train someone. I said, you know, I can't do it. I was worried also about the wear and tear of that kind of schedule, and I didn't want to, like, undermine my artistry with, like, a sort of, like, daily grind. So I said, I'll train somebody else to do it. And so, you know, I started training Olympic-grade athletes who are very, very, you know, strong guys. They have, you know, all kinds of experience with, you know, practicing and suffering, literally. And they were like, you know, they told me, said, Bill, this is really, really hard. And I had no, up until that moment, I had really no idea what was hard and what was easy. There's a train passing right now in my studio. That's a train track. It's in like a warehouse next to a train track, so I'm just moving away from that.
Right on.
But you know, how did I learn to do that? Well, you know, it's the childhood onset, you know, the basis in play, the body kind of adjusting, you know, as I grew. You know,
yeah.
I grew into crutches, you know, so my physicality, my armpits and everything just kind of a very calloused, and, you know, but I learned how hard it was when I actually tried to teach someone else how to do it, and that's when it really became apparent that, number one, I was making a lot of assumptions. In other words, like, you do one of these and you do one of those, so I had to name every move and come
yeah.
up with categories of movement, like traveling movement, you know, movements that's for camouflage, camouflaging the utility of grabbing the crutch with other movements that sort of hide it, sort of like
mm-hmm.
magicians do it, you know, they pull the card out of their sleeve while they're moving their other hand around.
This direction.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing in a lot of my dancing, you know, I'm kind of like creating extra flurry of movement to hide the practical grab of the handle of the crutch or the adjustment of the crutch by creating this choreography that hides all that movement in other movements. So that's how the fluidity evolved. That's how, you know, it became what it is through this multiple layers of information from my childhood, you know, based play and utilitarian use of the crutches into my knowledge of street dance and the fluidity and the style and the grace and the pizzazz of street dance, you know, and sort of applying that to my history of childhood use on crutches in terms of utility and play, and then refining it through the knowledge of the dance, and then also applying the radical relationship to urban architecture and applying the trick-based flipping tricks that skateboarding, you know, has in it, and sort of merging all that together. So you have this, like, very complex layered visual that you're looking at that, you know, it's hard to pick apart one ingredient from the other. Was that a skateboard trick? Was that a street dance trick? Was that a play-based utility or utilitarian trick? You know, how is, you know, like grabbing the crutch to pick up a book becomes, you know, throwing a spin down on a move with the flavor of, with the b-boy flavor, you know, so that's what you're seeing, basically.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in street performing? And what is that like, interacting with people on the street?
Well, I think, you know, growing up being a spectacle, a public spectacle as a child, you know, from, you know, I had all these different braces. This Italian brace maker, he had that thing for leather and steel. I don't know. He, like, the braces he built for me, you know, were very intricate heavy. And I don't know. I was very much a spectacle from my disability. I think that made me sort of like very aware of the street as a place that, you know, you're observed in public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have control over people, how they look at you. And people pretend not to look at you till you get past, and then they look at you after you're past. And, you know, so I was like 7, 8 years old realizing that I would walk past people, and if I whipped my head around, they'd all be staring at me, whereas when I was walking toward them, they were looking at their book or pretending not to look at me, or smiling really big, you know, but not really staring. You know, so I kind of got this knowledge early on about, like, sort of the fake front that people put on behind their real desires in the street. And so I think my street performances were sort of a return to the idea of spectacle and the relationship of the general public to an ambiguous representation of disability where, you know, I can walk, but I can't walk a long way, so I use my crutches in combination with my legs. But do I really need the crutches? Is it a new sport? You know, is it just a jackass thing? I mean, what's going on? There's a lot of questions people have immediately once they see what I'm doing. They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to pick it apart, and it's very layered. You know, yes, I like to clown around. You know, I'll pull up my sleeve, and I'll have 4 watches on my wrist. You know, and I'll try to sell you one. And then in my other sleeve, I'll have flowers up my sleeve, and I'll offer a flower. You know, so it just depends, you know. I'll make a noise like a cricket, and then I'll stomp on the ground, and crickets quiet, you know, like I just do a lot of different weird, goofy performance art, clowning, you know, provocateur as well, you know, but I also really play by a certain set of rules. I mean, I don't take advantage of people's good Samaritan impulses. I allow them to choose whether or not they're going to engage me. I mean, if I do a b-boy spin, like floats, right, that's called, it's a b-boy spin where you spin on your hands and you float around when your legs are up in the air. Well, I do it on crutches, right? But if I do that float downstairs and, you know, somehow as I'm floating down the stairs, you know, I spin and I start to collapse, so I grab onto a rail and then slide down that rail. And then when I come to the end, I do almost like a broken clown type of popping move to go to the floor. You know, well, that's all these different references, and I call that cascading references. And in my street performances, I create this performance of cascading references that people can choose or choose to ignore or choose to engage in. But I never say I'm doing this just to get this person to come and interact with me. You know, it's always about people's choices, and there's just as many people who ignore me or walk away or reject any type of interaction as, you know, actually there's more that do that than choose to interact with me. But, you know, my street performance was really a process of my art as well. You know, it wasn't just about disability. You know, I was making wearable sculpture. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I was going into old abandoned steel mills and pulling out all this stuff and making these installation pieces. So I was still always driven from the very early ages of going to these art classes and stuff, to art competitions. You know, at every stage I was winning art contests, from, you know, Halloween drawing in grade school to when I graduated from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, I got an award. I've got a Guggenheim Award in my adulthood, you know, Foundation for Contemporary Art, NEA, National Endowment of the Arts, and just on and on. You know, so I've always been told by the world that, yes, you're good at this, you know, so that's part of it too, just inspired to keep creating no matter what. I mean, there's no security, there's no financial, there's no 401k waiting for me at the end of this rainbow. So, you know, that's part of the reality as well. But how did I start street performance? Well, like I was explaining before how I'm always chasing ideas. Well, I, yeah. You know, I did those shows of like translating street dance to the stage, and my last idea was, you know what? Street dance, I'm not really sure that, you know, hip-hop really works on a proscenium in the way that I want it to. Let's take my street dance and put it in the street and bring the audience in the street. So then I got a bus, and I created a piece called Traffic, where I put everybody on, my whole audience on the bus, with a DJ playing music that I could hear in my headphone. And then I went out on the street, and then I skateboarded and danced through the streets, interacting with people while my audience rode on the bus with me. And they were able to, like, see me because I had transmitting video, and there was also video being shot from either end of the bus. So, like, if you're on the back of the bus, I'm at the front of the bus, you're not going to see me out the window, but if you look up to the monitor, you see me because the camera guy in the front of the bus is shooting what's happening. And you can hear my microphone, and I can hear the audience, and I can hear the music on the bus as well. So it's a very much of, like, recreating the, you know, theatrical proscenium atmosphere while still retaining the authenticity of the street. And that was, you know, part of the reason I went out in the street as well, you know, that I had these sort of notions of sociology and representation of disability and all of these things, and also, like, you know, radical relationship to urban architecture from skateboarding applied to, you know, modified rocker bottom crutches, you know, and sort of in public space interacting with stairs and rails and walls and that kind of thing. So it all kind of like evolved. You know, I never sat down and said, this is what I'm going to do. I've always listened and allowed things to come to me and processed them and spit them out. You know, like, this is what I do. I have things come to me from the world. I take them in, and, you know, I try to find solutions, and then I move on.
Mm-hmm. In your artist statement, a line that really struck me was, I keep dancing on crutches like some sort of icon of the possibility that even when broken, humanity can stay positive.
Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there, but, you know, it can be tough to stay positive. I mean, how do you do it?
Well, that's what I spoke of it as a notion. In other words, I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of that sentence, is that, you know, I'm not saying that I am that. I'm saying that it's this icon of this notion, when that's not really who I am.
Okay. So I didn't get it then. Okay.
I mean, read the sentence again, just to be sure that that's the same sentence I'm thinking of.
I keep dancing on crutches like some sort of icon of the possibility that even when broken, humanity can stay positive. So is that more about people's projections onto you? Because this is what a lot of people with disabilities experience. And this was kind of what led to my next question. In the documentary that's being made about you, Crutch, I saw a trailer, and one of the things you said there was abandoned assumption. And one of the things, you know, here at Jason's Connection, we talk to people with various life experiences and various experiences of ability and disability, but one of the most common themes is other people's projections onto you.
Yeah.
Well, you're in a wheelchair, so this, or you're autistic, so that. And, you know, artists experience this too. And so one of my questions, you know, what's the biggest assumption that people make about you incorrectly as an artist or a person or both?
I'm not really sure about that. I mean, I really have a hard time trying to find any sort of measuring stick for other people's projections onto me. I mean, you know, in public, there's a lot of like, there's a mixed bag. It's like, it goes the spectrum from tragic to heroic, you know? You know, like, oh, well, that's an amazing new sport, or isn't it amazing that you skateboard on crutches, or, oh, that's so sad that, you know, you have to use the crutches and pull your legs with the skateboard. You know, it's just, I don't think that I have like a common one. I think that's part of the challenge of the ambiguity of disability. You know, like, I feel like, you know, I've been talking about these ideas for 15 years and that academia is catching up in terms of disability studies programs and that kind of thing, because I've been noticing certain language like disability binarism, you know, the notion that, you know, you either are or you aren't, there's no in between. And I think that, you know, an ambiguity sort of is like a scattershot of assumptions that you can never know where it's coming from, so you have to kind of make yourself a neutral palate and listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is no, I would say there is no number one or most common, it's just a broad spectrum. And the common thing about it is I really don't know and I can't make an assumption. And, you know, and when I say abandoned assumptions, I'm like abandoning assumptions about what people are thinking of me. You know, not just like them abandoning assumptions about me, but also me assuming I can know what they're thinking about me. You know, so I have all these ways of measuring that and trying to figure it out, but yeah, I don't really have a clear answer for that.
Yeah. Another thing that you said in one of the trailers I watched for Crutch was you talked a little bit about people saying sorry to you all the time.
Yeah.
And I just wondered if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think that there's, you know, a relationship between trauma-based sort of reactions versus permanent disability. And I think that people respond to Perthes, the representation of Perthes that I manifest on my daily basis is like, oh, sorry, you know, like, oh, you got hurt skiing, or you hurt yourself skateboarding, or, you know, oh, sorry, you know, I'm in the way, or, you know, like, it's always just, and, you know, it's really a small thing. I mean, in terms of, you know, complaining about that, I there's some things about being in a documentary, you know, where they choose these certain moments that they edit into this clip that then gets shown over and over, and suddenly, like, what you said becomes much more important than what it was. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, people say sorry to people who are pregnant. People say sorry to old people, you know, who are elderly. Oh, sorry, let me get out of your way. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, so it's not some, like, special thing that I suffer from. But, you know, because I talked about it in that way, the same with the other clip where, you know, it's like, you know, I've tried all the meds, and, you know, I haven't tried all the meds, you know, like, I've tried a lot of meds, but I haven't tried all the meds.
Right.
And you know, it's like, it's, well, and I'm in pain, yeah, and I'm in pain, but I also have times when I don't have pain, so it's not, like, constant blazing pain every day of my life.
I'm sure.
It's a continuum of up and down, depending on many different factors, from the weather to how much I did yesterday. You know, I mean, it's just a lot of different aspects, how I slept, you know, my diet, there's so many things about the level of pain that I experience. And it really changes day to day. So to just say I'm in pain and I've tried all the meds and I don't know what to do, it makes it sound really, you know, exciting for a promo. But at the same time, it's like it's a much more complex story than that. It's not complaining about the filmmakers like they did something wrong, because they have to put something in the trailer, and they certainly can't put all of it, because it's a very late, complex, you know, subject that they're pursuing. So, you know, when you look at the trailers, you know, like, there's no, there's, I don't think anywhere in the trailer is me just walking without crutches, even though I do that. You know, because it's such a, I have a broad range of representation of disability. Like, I'll walk around my house. You know, I'll walk here or there, depending. You know, or I'll walk with one crutch, you know, and then I'll use two crutches, and I'll use two crutches and a skateboard. Then I'll just have somebody else completely do what I want to do. And I'm not even doing it. You know, so that's the range. You know, when you see somebody else carrying a box down the street, that's actually my disability you're seeing. You know, and that's funny to me. You know, that's like comedy. Like, they could show in their promo, Bill Shannon, you know, is, you know, has Perthes disease, and then just show my friend carrying a box, you know, like, in terms of, like, you know, the people saying sorry to me, I mean, that's just an observation, you know, sorry, you know, and I just go, I'm sorry too, you know, I'm sorry, you know, so I do reflection of that, you know, I reflect, I bounce it back, you know, no, I'm sorry, you know, and so,
So what is the status of the documentary Crutch right now?
You know, it's not really my project. I'm the subject of it, and these guys are making it, and they've been following me around. And, you know, I've known Saatchi for years, and she introduced me to Chandler, and now I've known him for, you know, 15-some years. So, you know, they both become really kind of, you know, friends, but also people who have really a strong, a really solid understanding of my philosophy, my artistic philosophy, my creative process, the sociological aspects of my work, and the physical dancing element of it. And so, you know, it's like a pie. It's like a pie chart, you know, with all these different interests, you know, sculpture, video work, and all these things. And so all of those things are all part of a continuum of creating and being an artist. And, you know, this disability thing, you know, gets pushed to the surface, because when you're a performing artist, you have to represent your disability. I mean, if I was Chuck Close and doing paintings, you know, my art would have nothing to do with disability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I never promoted disability as, like, that's why my work's important. It just, because of how I was dancing, it took on that role, and then because it took on that role, I reacted to it. And so when you react to something that's happening, then you're like, then people are like, oh, that's what you're doing it for. You know, like, I just wrote a grant, and, you know, I wanted to work with people with physical disabilities to create these dances that were sort of paralleled off the way that I created my dance. So, you know, I'm doing these workshops. I'm an artist in residence at Kelly Strayhorn Theater in Pittsburgh right now. And, you know, I'm sort of setting up these workshops for people who have a physical disability to come and work with me to develop a unique, authentic vocabulary based out of their own disability, you know. And that's really the only true authentic disabled dance form, is not one that sort of emulates able-bodied form and translates it to a disabled form, but rather that the dance emerges from a life experience in a disabled body, into a practice, into a codified sort of set of movements that can then be recorded and historically referenced. And so that's my mission, or sort of with my own work at least, is, you know, I already have this big library of, like, these are the moves you do, you know, and so that will be recorded now. And I never had anything to look at like that. There was there was nothing for me there. There's no reference book of how to do a spin, you know, what kind of spins are possible. I just had to discover them out of nothing, out of music, out of a love for music. You know, like, my entire life as an artist has been immersed in music, from, you know, Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life in the 70s. You know, my parents played all that music, Donna Summer, and in Beethoven, my dad was into classical, a lot of classical, a lot of jazz. So that was my childhood, and then when I started getting older, I got into classic rock, but also got into hip hop, and then I got into, like, when I started skateboarding, I got into hardcore and punk rock, then I got into, like, you know, jungle and drum and bass, And from Bungalow and Throne Basin, I got into house music, and I got into dubstep, and then got into, you know, so it just, like, evolved, and I really have, like, a broad spectrum of appreciation of music, and so all of that dancing, also, you have to realize, I didn't stand in the studio looking in a mirror inventing that.
Yeah.
I was with my friends, I was partying, and I was dancing, and I loved the music so much that I did something I never did before, and all my friends said, oh, my God, what did you just do? And then I would backtrack and try to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, that's how dancing evolved for me. It was never like, okay, what am I going to invent today? Oh, let me try this. No, it was like, that beat is so crazy. I'm just going to go in the circle, and I'm going to explode, and I'm not going to think. I'm just going to be.
Right.
And so, you know, the history of the of evolution. Then I went back, and then later I mapped it to share it.
Yeah. Yeah. What else are you working on right now? Speaking of your projects, it seems like you have many. What else are you doing right now? Or is this the main thing?
Well, I'm going to CryptFest on this Saturday. I'm performing in New York at BAM as part of CryptFest, which is like a gathering during the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act of you know, disabled artists who, you know, create cutting edge work, you know, like sort of more alternative performance stuff. And then I also have the video installation component of my grant I got investing in professional arts. I got a grant to basically create new prosthetics for dance, like create some new devices for dancing that sort of extend function, and then also improve my crutches and create a new version of those, and also to create choreography for a sculptural video installation piece. So those are my projects this year. It's pretty massive. You know, it's a lot of fabricating, a lot of welding, and you know, conceptualizing and designing and fabricating and just, you know, assemblage. So there's a lot of that. I'm also trying to upgrade my studio. I have, you know, a 2,200 square foot studio, and I'm looking for people to come in here and, like, be a part of it, you know, share with the rent, share with the creative process, have their own work in here. So I'm also doing that, you know, just trying to, and I have three kids, you know, and I'm trying to raise my kids, you know. I'm, you know, pushing them to, you know, my daughter loves to sculpt and to draw, and they're both, the older ones are avid readers. And, you know, pushing my son to, you know, he's doing, he did this, you know, online course for Java programming and modifying his Minecraft game to add his own characters and, you know, create his own worlds and stuff. So he's doing some Java programming and gaming. And, you know, I'm just trying to show them that, you know, it's really about your own, you know, nowadays it's not so much like go to school, get your degree, get your job. It's like come up with something that's yours and make it. And market it and find you know, investors.
Yeah.
Not that they're at that stage yet, you know. but my work has never been you know geared toward making money. And I understand now my mother was so against me going to art school. She was like, you know, why don't you get, you know, this other type of degree to earn money, and then, you know, you can do your art until your art starts to make it. I'm like, nope, I'm an artist. That's what I do. And, you know, I've never really been focused on making money. So so I'm still gig to gig, you know, pretty much, and just sort of like hustling, you know, and that's the life of the artist. And it's a sacrifice. It's a big sacrifice, you know. There was a couple opportunities I had to just get on the gravy train, you know, working for the mayor's office of Chicago. You know, I could have just stayed in that job. You know, I worked in there in like 96. You know, I got a job there, and I ended up like just saying, you know, I'm out of here, even though I easily could have been climbing the ladder there. And, you know, I had a couple opportunities like that I really said, you know, I'm an artist, and this is what I do, and I'm sticking to it, do or die, and I'll starve.
Right.
I'll starve for it. You know, I just don't want my kids to starve. So that's why that's why I'm getting my son into programming. So he can feed me. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'll be fine.
No, that was actually one of my questions, was how do you balance your art with your family life? And I didn't realize you had three kids. I knew you had kids, plural, but I didn't realize you had three. So,
yeah, I have a 2-year-old and a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the 9-year-old's I mean, sorry, the 8-year-old's almost 9. That's what it is. Yeah, my 8-year-old turns 9 in September, so I'm already calling her 9, but she's really...
Yeah.
So I have 2 boys and 1 girl, the girl's in the middle, and I have a 2-year-old who's turning 3 in September.
Holy cow.
So we have a little trailer guy, little family mascot.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I've asked you everything I meant to ask you. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners today?
You know, I would say that I'm going to be, I've designed a lot of shirts, and I'm going to be coming out with a whole bunch of, like, these designs based on Dancing on Crutches and on some of the sociological components of my work around engaging people. And so, you know, keep an eye out for these. I think some people really go for it, really dig it. And,
yeah.
You know, my website's whatiswhat.com. And I always manage my own websites, which means they're not very well managed because I don't have enough time to really be Captain Website. So,
yeah.
But it's a blog, you know, it's a lot of material on there. If you want to check out my video installation art, I don't know if you're going to be posting up, like, work samples with this or not or whatever, but...
We usually include links to any important website, so we will definitely send people to your website.
Well, there's a recent article on projectionmapping.org. It's like projection-mapping that I just did a wearable video mask project for the Three Rivers Arts Festival Create Art and Tech Fest. So that was a really fun video project, you know, that's kind of like what I do, but not really centered around, like, notions of disability or anything to do with that. It's just like my video art.
Yeah.
So there's, like, a, you know, an interview, but there's also some good video and images of, like, my wearable video. Because I've always been doing wearables from when I was going in steel mills in 1986 up until now, you know, these wearable pieces. So just a continuum. And so that's out there, and then my YouTube channel is /Deetoe, D-E-E-T-O-E.
Okay.
So that's a good channel, and then my my Vimeo as well is William Shannon.
Okay.
Yeah. So check it out. That's me out there. Hit me up if you want have any questions, or if anybody wants to, you know, ask me anything about their own practice, or, you know, they have to go to a wedding on crutches. I have lots of, like, different strategies for formal events, you know, walking in the woods, you know, lots of different solutions. So I'm a consultant. I also do consulting for use of crutches for all sorts of people. So, yeah, that's it. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, and I'm going to definitely be, as I'm promoting my dance workshop, I'll be sending people to this podcast to check it out.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Thanks.